What's up, everybody, and welcome to episode number 123 of Confessions of a Market Maker. I'm your co-host, Ray, aka All Day Ray, aka Razor Ramon. And I'm joined here by my illustrious co-host, former market maker of 20 years and current day retail trader and educator, the man who stretched worthless paper like elastic, the proper villain, JJ. How's it going?
Good brother, how are you? Good to be
Doing good,
back.
man. Yeah, it's good to be back. We've had a bit of a break here. My hair's grown out a little bit. How's the summer in Europe, man? How's it been?
It's good. I'm in the UK and in beautiful Liverpool, and it's a great city. Wonderful people, good music. No
Excellent.
complaints. No complaints.
Big shout out to Liverpool. The accents there are pretty interesting, pretty unique. I like it.
Yeah,
For sure.
we'll have to get a Scouse trader on to one of these times.
For sure, for sure. And our guest today has been trading full time since 1999. He's been a principal and head trader for RBC Capital and Translucent Capital Management. Now he's a retail trader trading weekly options on a strict technical basis. You guys know him as Shadow Trader. Let me introduce Peter Reznicek. Peter, how's it going?
Ray, how are you? Good to be with you guys.
Excellent.
Thank
Thanks so
you.
much, Peter. And we were talking a little bit beforehand, man. So you were on episode two, our very first guest. We really appreciate that, man. Thanks for coming back. So about like 5 years ago, you were on, and one of the funny like tidbits that like stuck with me from that that was kind of, I guess, surprising. I didn't wasn't expecting that you were a manager like to hip hop artists, I believe, before you became a trader, which is really neat.
Like late 90s, early 2000s. Coming up to like the year 2000, that's when I kind of hung it up. But yeah, for like 8 or 9 years before that, throughout the whole 90s, basically.
And that was a great era of hip hop music, in my opinion, like probably my favorite era. I have like a hard time, I guess, like finding new artists that I like. I don't know if just because I'm getting older. Do you have any like good newer artists for me, or are you still kind of like me? You listen to some of like the older music?
I mean, I definitely listen to some new stuff, but I feel the same way that that era was really special. For me, it was always the era actually just before it, which I think is the golden age. I call it 85 to 89 golden age.
Okay, yeah.
But some people think that it's the one just after, which one was more the advent of the West Coast stuff or whatever. But I mean, there's still good stuff out there. I think the problem with the whole thing is it's much fewer and far between, right? Like if you recall from that era, like everybody was coming so strong with their releases, and those releases would be, once every 18 months. And now, because of streaming, it's on such an accelerated schedule that you have people releasing every 6 months, and there's just a glut of product. And as a consumer, you have to sift through it to try to find anything of quality. It just gets harder, Just like the
Sure.
barrier to entry is so low now that anybody can just upload stuff and it's easy.
Sure. I could see that with the whole industry changing. Yeah, man. Oh man. I think I have to do agree with you. I don't know. I mean, I've been into some of the 80s stuff, but I mean, I love like that, like when Nas, Mobb Deep, Wu-Tang, like that era was, oh, I love that era so much.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm gonna see Nas soon, which I'm really excited about. I don't know if you heard, but he's spending the summer going around to different cities that have orchestras, and he's playing with the Philharmonic of each city. So I'm actually
Really?
catching that in Vegas in a couple of months, which should be interesting.
That's so cool. I think I've seen it where like he has like the live bands, and he's going through like Illmatic, and they're
Yeah,
playing
that's
like
what it is.
the.
It's like 25th anniversary, or I guess 30th anniversary at this point of Illmatic. But he's doing the whole thing with an orchestra.
That's so cool, man. I
Yeah,
love it. When
it should
I
be
was like
very
just watching
interesting.
it, oh, it's so cool with the live band. Oh, that's awesome, man.
Yeah,
I'm getting like goosebumps. That's awesome,
should be
man.
interesting.
Yeah, for sure. Well, all right. We didn't bring you on to talk hip hop, even though I do enjoy it.
Well, we could. I'm totally open with that. We could.
Oh, cool. Maybe we'll circle back to it. But Peter, for the people not new to you, and just like a refresher to us here as well, can you just give us just a brief rundown of how you got started in trading, what got you into it, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, absolutely. For me, it's been since right around 98, 99, I started watching closely. I think it was just the same sort of internet bubble run-up that everybody was interested in, but I was only really looking at the tail end of it. And I thought at the time, I didn't know what I was doing, but I thought it should be shorted. So I was about a solid 3 to 4 months early on that because the crack didn't come until March of 2020, which is when the Nasdaq started to fall and then obviously took back like 90% of that move or whatever. But that really kind of gave me the bug, which I always really had. I was looking at the markets even at a much younger age, kind of just looking at listings in the Wall Street Journal or whatever when I was little, and looking at magazines and reading books about that sort of thing. I thought it was fascinating. And that's just when the journey started for me, just like hardcore, like right around 2000. And it really just followed the same trajectory I think that most traders do, where you're just trying for the first few years to find an edge and figure things out. I always tell people that the most important takeaway from that era for me, like those first 3 to 4 years, was just literally filling up notebooks. Just filled up five, six notebooks, like a stack like this of notes, comments, like, okay, the market did this. Why did this trade not work? Why did this price go here? Why didn't that happen? And it was just this self-taught thing, not to say that there's not an immense amount of, good education out there, but at the time it, I probably couldn't afford it, and it just wasn't a path for me. So I just kind of studied on my own and kept doing it. And the trajectory as far as profitability was, pretty much very in line with what people say it does statistically, which is like a 5 to 6 year period. And that's really what it was for me. It was like a solid 5 years of trying to grind and figure it out. And then it just started catching traction. And I was fortunate that I was connected with a good amount of people who had some connections with, the thinkorswim folks, ex-market maker, ex-floor traders from Chicago. So I latched on to some of those people who taught me a lot. They turned me on to other people who taught me more. And I was also able to start trading other people's money relatively early in my in my journey, right around the time when it all started to click for me. And that trial by fire was very valuable to me because from a very, from a point that was relatively early in my in my journey, I was able to kind of size and understand how like S&P options worked in much bigger size. And it kind of just set the tone for everything for me later. And then from then, Shadow Trader came a bit later, around like late 06. And just, kept on going from there, and it's just been, it's from there on, it's been pretty solid.
That's awesome. I think there's a lot to be said for being self-taught, right? Like, I mean, it could probably be maybe some more bumps and bruises, but I don't know. I think like as like over time, I've like almost because sometimes you learn bad habits from people or you take on someone's like mindset that's like maybe or it doesn't apply to you. Would you agree with that? Like,
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad you said that because that actually literally just came up on Twitter yesterday. I answered somebody on Twitter. It's so such a coincidence that you say that because somebody said to me on Twitter about something that they just hate doing in the market. I think it was I had posted a small watch list of like 8 or 9 stocks yesterday saying, hey, these are charts I really like right now. And two of the stocks at the top, I said that I want to be short Microsoft calls. And I can't remember the other one. It's just an area above us where I felt like there was some channel resistance. And I said, I think you should be short these calls above whatever. And this person replied and said something like, I hate selling naked calls or whatever, like this doesn't work for me or blah, blah, blah. And I replied, I said, I'm glad you said that because you realize that that's a strong move forward in your evolution because you've figured out what your personality is. And many newer traders do not figure out what their personality is. They just keep doing things that somebody else is telling them to do or whatever. And it's not exactly right. It doesn't fit their personality. Like a perfect example is I always say I'm very against Iron Condor. I just don't like the strategy. But that's just me. That doesn't mean that a person out there can't be making millions with it and they can be sleeping well at night and it just works for them. It has to be what works for you. It just you have to find enough things. And pursuant to what you're saying about not about being self-taught, you're absolutely right. Because right, since I did the grind for a number of years and did a lot of trial and error, I figured out the personality. I figured out what works for me, both options wise and stocks wise. Like what am I comfortable with? What makes me sleep at night? What keeps me up at night? It's all about style and it really has to gel with who you are.
For sure, for sure. And that, and not to get like too philosophical here, but that's why I love like the market for like an analogy for life, because I think you could say the same thing for about life as well, kind of, you know, figuring things out on your own as well. You mentioned journaling and writing a lot. I assume that's, well, maybe not, that that's something that you're still into, writing stuff down a lot. I find for myself, Peter, that and I know some people are like this, they've done studies on it, that like you retain information like better if you write it down, or like certain people have that disposition. Would you say that's something for you, and is this a practice that you still partake in?
I don't partake in it anymore, and I haven't done it in a while. But what I do still is consistently write down the ideas that I'm looking at, and specific, say, targets or stops. And I feel that's kind of important. Like I'll have some notes always that sort of jars you, I think, into action. So I think that's important, and I agree with you 100%. I mean, that goes back to Napoleon Hill, right, with the Think and Grow Rich, which I always recommend to people, because it sounds like such a cheesy title, but if you read that book, they keep talking about this big secret in the book, and the big secret is just that super successful people write everything down. They basically write down their goals. They have this sort of transference between what's their hand on the paper, and I think it's most important to do it that way, with an actual physical pen and actual paper, not typing, like literally. Just like you were saying, there's something to be said for that feeling of writing it down. It just cements it in your brain. And I don't know, for me, that just works. I'm a huge to-do list person. Like, my desk is littered with these scraps of paper where I take 8.5 by 11 and I cut it this way, so I have like little portrait sizes, and it's all just to-do lists for me, just constantly.
Yeah, it's cool.
Yeah,
Yeah,
a lot of people work.
I'm a big believer in like the physical aspect of it too. Same thing like with reading. Like they said, like have like actually touching the book and just having it in front of you is a little bit different than people reading on like a Kindle or an iPad or, you know, whatever the
No, I
case.
wouldn't be surprised. Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. And just to take a quick time out here to announce that our Micro E Futures Trading Room is now offering a 7-day free trial with no obligations. Offering not only ES, where JJ teaches and trades, but other future instruments, stocks, crypto, and for my real degenerates, we have a DFS and sports betting room, which I'm highly active in. Again, that's a 7-day free trial with no obligations or commitment. Come join us at microefutures.com. Peter, early in your trading journey, were you always an options trader, or did that come down the line?
It came slightly down the line, but it wasn't that far down the line. Like I said, I was fortunate to be connected with some of the early people from Thinkorswim, and some of their better traders that they had on the platform that they connected me with. And obviously, those people were strictly options. But the beginning of the trading for me was day trading equity. And yes, so options did come a little later, but not much later. I would say within the first, few years of starting.
Yeah, just curious, just from your perspective, what was the appeal to you about options as opposed to equity trading?
I think the creativity of it, and that's something that I work on to this day. Just the amount of permutations and different combinations that can be made from option spreads. I'm a very out of the box options trader. I like to use really esoteric more stuff. I'm big on, unbalanced butterfly, broken wing, things like that. I also really like the time aspect of it, and the way that you have the multiple inputs into the options price that gives you a lot of different ways that you can win. And I'm such a big believer that if you have structure and direction correct, you can really win multiple ways. You often don't need the stock to go in the direction that you need, right? You can be playing for time. You can structure in such a way with like a broken wing butterfly, which I do all the time, to have zero debit. And then, you can go there, make huge money. You can go sideways, make some money. You can go down, not lose any money. That's really just kind of been my MO, is once I figured out how to structure that way, I started realizing that the solid money, the consistency, is going to come from avoiding losses. I shouldn't say avoiding losses, but controlling losses as much as possible. So those more esoteric structures allow me to have negligible losses when I'm wrong, and then have gains when I'm right. And that helps an immense a lot. That helps immensely.
Yeah, for sure. Excellent. Yeah, I always like the I still have it myself. I ventured a little bit into options trading. Something I think I need to definitely give more study into, because I think it's a at least based on your description and others I've talked to who are experienced option traders, it seems very similar to like, let's say me making a sports bet, right? And coming in, like there's different ways I can win a bet. Let's say if I'm betting under on a game, all right, or I'm under on a specific player. He, you know, I mean, God forbid, I hate to say it this way, but he could get injured. The team could have a bad game. He gets taken out because the team's getting blown out. You know, there's a lot of different, you can build a narrative to how you can win on different type of outcomes as opposed to like a specific event happening.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Whereas with equities, you know, it's a very binary event, right? It's a
Right.
very, it's yes or no. The stock is either going to go up or down, and you're holding it. And once you're in it, you'll only have one choice of exit. You can either sell or hold or add to the position or whatever. So you're not, you know, you're not left with that, with much to do, and you have to be right just on that direction, right? It's very, very specific.
Right, for sure. You know, as we probably all know, many of us take lumps early on in trading. You know, I think this is good, especially for like newer traders or people who are struggling, Peter. How was the learning curve for trading yourself? I mean, was there any like particular painful early moments for you?
Oh yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, I think if I recall specifically, it was like two accounts blown. I would happy to say not large. You know, at that point they were in the $10,000 range. I can't remember, Ray, because it's been a while, if I told this story to you the first time, because the last time we had spoken was, you know, years ago. But there was also a blow up, as I was saying, that when I started trading other people's money, on the first iteration of it, there was quite a big loss. Like in 1 week, I had an options position that just kind of turned into spaghetti, and I was a little bit over my skis at that time. And I actually enjoy telling the story because it was very, very painful at the moment. But something happened in that we had had a couple of different avenues set up for us to trade other people's money at the time, and we did one before the other. And so, to keep it super short, the one turned into a pretty big blowout. It was like a couple hundred thousand dollar loss in 1 week, and the capital was like $1 million. So you can imagine it was like 20% down. So of course the usual thing happens: the people are pissed, they're threatening lawsuits, which is BS. You know, obviously they don't have that power to do that, but the relationship terminates, you know, after that week. But what was good about this story was that at that exact moment, I had this, you know, I had a serious weekend there to think, and I knew that the other opportunity was starting the next week. These two people were going to be kind of running in tandem, but they were completely separate. And that really was actually great for me, because that was a tough 48 hours to get through. But more importantly, that was when I was able to go back. I knew that the strategy that I had the first time was valid. I just knew that I had made major mistakes along the way. And so I went back and I was able to just rip the whole thing apart and say, okay, if you had a chance to do all this over again, if you could rewind 1 week, 7 days back, if this never happened, how would you do this? And I realized, okay, I would do this, this, and this. And that's when the relationship with the other entity started, and we went on a good run. It was great. And it just all clicked, and it was actually good. So sometimes, as long as you can learn from it, those blowups, you know, whether they're small like they were in my personal account or somewhat larger as they were with someone else, I think they're of immense value. You know, I mean, I'm just such a huge proponent that all the education comes from the losing side, all of it. And that is true whether it was 20 years ago for me, or it's going on like almost 25 years now, or if it's just something you're doing in your personal account now, right? Like you sustain a loss, what happened? You got to go back and like rip that chart apart, rip that structure apart. What options was I in? Was this the right strikes? Was this the right duration? What was my read here on the chart? You know, and then you want to try to divide everything into those, I call them good losses versus bad losses. And the only bad loss is the one, you know, when you go back and you rip that chart apart and you look at your spreads and you say, oh, you know what? I thought this was support, it really wasn't. Or I thought, you know, I thought that the structure should have been this, but it's obvious that I put the duration too far out, or maybe I was too much short options and I only had 5 days to expiry and it ran me over. What you're saying, when you can identify that it's your mistake, okay, then that's a bad loss. But when the chart just sort of falls out of bed and there's nothing you can do about it, and it's the most, you know, top flight pattern, everything was perfect, you had the right spread, you're right, then that's just the market. You have nothing to worry about. You just put that into the good loss column and it's fine. And that one you won't learn anything from. You know, you don't need to beat yourself up over that. There's not too much to learn from it. It's only those ones where you can honestly pinpoint that you did something wrong. That's extremely helpful.
For sure.
That makes total sense. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, total
Go
makes
ahead,
sense.
JJ.
Yeah, no, that I really appreciate the way you break that down, because the one thing that I keep teaching people is to not get upset when they take a loss, tear the loss apart, and try and look at it. It's really hard when money's on the line. That's why the micro is a great way to learn. So you can actually tear it apart and look at it from a view of curiosity as opposed to anger. And then you can,
That's right.
once
That's
you
right.
switch your mind to curiosity, and that's what I learned from you, because if not for you, none of this would be here. Because if I hadn't found you on tastytrade, I was completely lost, and then I found Market Profile, and you and Brad were so calm. I was like, oh, hey, these guys know what they're talking about, and I just got lost in it, and found Jim and stuff. But what you're saying about that is so true. If people can just kind of reframe the loss and learn from it,
Yeah,
we learn so
absolutely,
much from losses, and that, and I learned
absolutely.
from you, so thank you.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah, and I think it's huge too. And it probably, yeah. I mean, I think it definitely touches on the psychological aspect, like you were talking about, Peter. Because like I think most people's natural reaction, or probably everyone's, especially first coming to trading, is like loss is bad, loss equals bad, and like you highlighted, loss is not always bad. And it could get real confusing for somebody, right? Like, oh, I lost, but you actually made a good play. And so you can get yourself in this whole like I don't want to use the word, but get
Yeah,
your mind jumbled
exactly.
up. You know what I'm saying?
Right. I think the problem is also is the newer traders, because they're not seasoned in the game long enough and they haven't spent enough years in the seat, they don't know that these losses will never ever stop. They think that there's some holy grail of where they're just going to win all the time, but they don't get that it never stops. As you lose constantly. The whole point is that you need to lose small. It's just how the market works. You will never be right all the time, because the market will always do things that make no sense. That's just how it is, because there's so many factors pushing on that price, and so many different individuals around the world who have different time frame outlooks and inventory positions, and that all of that is pressure on either side of the stock. And that's not possible for any human being to predict that 100%. Exactly.
One of my
Yeah.
favorite sayings is we're dealing with probabilities, not certainties.
Right.
And people really need to internalize that.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right, so Peter, I think it would be perhaps useful for the listeners if you maybe you could just like walk us, and I'm sure you have different strategies, and this might be too general to ask, but maybe just walk us through like maybe your thought process for selecting an options trade.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, first of all, it's 100% technical. You have to start with the charts. And then what my MO is I try to always structure options in a certain way. One of my sayings in my room, I run a room for weekly options, I call it death before debit, meaning I'd rather die than pay a debit for a trade, because what I feel is that if you can structure properly, and I do this through a concept that I call net short, which I'll discuss in a second. If you can structure properly and not have cost outlay, well, then obviously, if you're wrong on direction, you don't lose anything. So all of those trades that we just talked about where you're going to be wrong, those go into a more break-even column rather than a big loss column. So that's helpful. So what I'm mostly interested in doing is usually using, excuse me, weekly options, anywhere from 1 to say 10 days of duration. And seeing how I can structure trades where I can get directional exposure without having cost outlay. So a perfect example would be, let's say, using a ratio spread, which is a 1 by 2 or a 1 by 3. So I may have a bullish bias and I may think the stock is moving from 50 to 75, but instead of buying a 50, 60 call vertical that would cost me $3, I would say, okay, I'd rather buy a 55-70 ratio spread. Let's say I know the resistance is 75. I buy a 60-75 ratio, where I might buy the 60 call and sell the 75 call up to 3 times. I'll sell it 2 times, I'll sell it 3 times. So now my cost is zero, or maybe I brought in a credit for this. And so the difference in the trade between myself and somebody else is that the person who doesn't structure this way, they will have bought the 50-60 call vertical, paid $3. And maybe the stock rallies, maybe it doesn't, but more than likely it goes to like 62, 63. And now they're close to expiry, but what's their position? Their position is break even, right? They've got intrinsic value of three, they paid three, they made a move, they didn't make anything. Whereas in my end, I maybe collected a 40-cent credit, I get to keep it. And if the stock even rallies a little bit more, unless they get, if it just gets a few points higher, whatever, like I'm kind of playing where I don't need to get in the money. I don't need to get all the way to where that short strike is, right? I'm thinking more in terms of turning a 40-cent credit into something I can flip for a dollar credit or an 80-cent credit, like a further credit on down the line. So it's just kind of like a different mindset where the most people look at this of like, what is the big move and how am I going to capture most of the big move? Whereas I look at it as like, how can I purchase some structure that is going to increase in price, even if I don't get the big move, even if I just get some move, but more importantly, if I get no move, I collect a small credit or I break even. That's really the most important thing is I'm always kind of thinking of that door number three of where, okay, this is not going to go anywhere. Whereas newer traders, usually they're just kind of locked into that. Okay, I'm here. It's A to B. I'm here. I'm going there. I'm going to make this big move and it's going to be this much money and whatever. And they're kind of fixated on that. So that's really been my MO, and that ratio spread is just one example of how I do it. I do it in a number of different ways. I can have ratio, I can have broken wing butterfly, I can have unbalanced. I do a lot of risk reversals, which means that in the same example, if I think the move is going to be 60 to 75 and I'm at 50, but I know I've got solid support at 45, I'm selling 45 puts before I even think about buying whatever structures up there. And then I will spend the money on vertical. Like then I will buy, the 60, 70 vertical for those $3 because I took in $3 of credit on the put side. So then I'm okay with it. And then I can make a bigger move off that vertical. Now when that stock only moves a few dollars and that vertical is only worth three at expiry instead of 10, well, guess what? I just made the whole three because the puts have gone to zero. My cost was nothing, and I'm in very, very good shape. And again, I'm in much better shape than the person who only bought the vertical.
Right, for sure. It's definitely appealing in my mind to, to be able to win in like a few different ways, as we were talking before, as opposed to just, binary outcome. Peter, if I remember correctly, you use market eternals and market profile in your trading. That's correct.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Big
Yeah, do
on
you mind
both.
just
Yeah, well, I was just gonna say, I guess you probably want to ask about profile. I know you guys are into
Yeah,
that as
just
well.
Yeah, just curious to how that plays into your analysis.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I always tell people I'm not a profile trader, which I'm not. And it's funny because Jim Dalton says that often, which I think he's definitely more of a profile trader than I am. But I'm not a day time frame profile trader really. But I do run a room, so I'm calling out those levels all the time. I'm definitely big on all that. I write a report every morning called Peter Spinelli Perspective, which is strictly market profile based. But the way I do it is a little bit different in that I'm looking at more in line with what are the bigger signals that the profile is telling me for the overall bias. So it's almost like I'm swing trading because that's what I'm looking at options all the time on that, 2 to 10 day time period. So I'm really interested in what the broad market is doing. So I'm using the way that value is developing on the profile and that sort of extra added element of time to give me a better idea of what the bias is on like the daily S&P and NASDAQ chart, right? I'm basically using it to kind of dovetail with that together. So that's really for me how I'm using profile. And as far as internals are concerned, I can't speak enough about them. We could spend hours just on that because I am the biggest believer in market internals. I always have been. I feel like during the time when we started out with thinkorswim way back in the day running that room embedded in their platform, I think we were really the first people to be talking about that in such a big way where before that you would hear mentions, I would say, like on CNBC or Bloomberg or whatever financial media you're watching, they would mention and just kind of gloss over advances decliners, for instance. That would be a classic thing you would hear on television. And that would just be this one little piece of the puzzle, one little thing. And they never really get, I feel that they gave such short shrift to that, so to speak. Like they never talk about that, how important it was. And I go back to like what you're asking me before about those years of like kind of trying to figure it out and losing money in those first 5 to 6 years. That's really where the light bulb moments happened. It was that. It was when I was on eSignal, which I still am on today, and I went through their list of market internals. And it's a very, very long list. It's hundreds and hundreds of things. You can find this on things from other platforms too, where you can have NYSE new highs, NASDAQ new highs, new 52-week lows, whatever. There's the exchanges put out all of these internals. And if you take the time to sift through them and chart them for a while, which I did with like hundreds of them, I eventually narrowed it down to the fact that I knew that there was something really to be said for watching what the breadth was, which is a relationship between up and down volume, what the relationship between advancing and declining stocks is, and most importantly, what the tick is on the NYSE and the NASDAQ. And that formed the basis of what we called the quad, if you recall from back in the day, which we got thousands of traders trading in during that thinkorswim era, and we still use that today, of basically having a screen, which is a matrix of four charts in front of you, and having those market internals up all day long, whereas most people focus on having a matrix of a bunch of different stocks. Like they might have all the tech stocks or all these stocks or whatever. But for us, we really always wanted to have those internals front and center because we realized from a very, very long time ago that that's really how the market moves. And the moves are either confirmed or denied by that. And that the pattern itself is really just like the last thing, that if you just rely on patterns without that context of those internals, I don't think it's going to work for you because you're going to keep getting faked out. You're going to keep buying patterns that fail. You're going to be, for instance, selling a pattern that's going against bullish undertones or vice versa, and it's just not going to work, And so over the years, we stuck with that. And then about maybe, I don't know, five years ago or so, we refined it where we added something that we call the weighted AD indicator, which I'm really proud of. I always tell people that, if my career ended today, this is really something that I'm most proud of. It's something that we've been selling on our site for a while, and it's super duper popular. And basically, what it does is it figures out in a histogram manner what the 11 sectors of the S&P are doing from the open, which is what matters. Because especially if you're day trading, you should not be paying any attention to tech stocks being down on a gap from yesterday or what is discretionary doing as opposed to yesterday, where it's all about from the open. So we created an indicator that basically plots histograms of what would happen if these 11 sectors were weighted by how much weight they have in the S&P. So as you know, there's only 11 sectors that make up that S&P, and that starts with technology and goes all the way down to real estate. And when you're over here with technology, you've got 30% of the market is technology. Then you've got healthcare right behind it. That's like almost 20% of the market, or maybe that's maybe a little more. I can't remember, right? So you've got huge swaths of the market right there. And then you go on to, financials, consumer discretionary, communications, et cetera. And in our indicator, all those things are weighted properly. So that really tells you a lot about the market. Like, and we also have something built in there where we've got the equal weighted sectors as well, just with a straight line against the histogram. And that tells you a lot, right? Because let's say that equal weight line is super high, but the histogram is really low. Well, what information is that telling you about the market? It's super valuable information. If you're day trading ES long, your situation, your trade is probably going to fail because it tells me right off the bat that the market is being led. Obviously, if the equal weight line is super high and the weighted is low, well, that tells me right off the bat the market's being led by utilities, real estate, and materials. Sectors like that that are extremely underrepresented in the S&P, right? Altogether, those last four sectors out of the 11, they barely crack 10% of the market. So think about it. If you don't have technology and healthcare and financials pushing your ES trade forward, you should not be long ES in that situation. So it's super valuable. So that's just one of the tweaks we made to the internals over the years. And we brought that in. We also developed something called Iceberg Tick that we're very proud of, where still using the same tick indicator we always did, which is New York Stock Exchange, but now we're looking at it in more of a like a customized mountain chart, so to speak, so that when the tick is above zero, I've always tried to teach people over the years that the most important thing in the tick, because it's such a drunken monkey kind of barcode type of indicator, is that it's really the amount of time that it's spending above or below zero. Don't pay too much attention to the highs and the lows, the extremes. People get very focused, I think, falsely on plus 1,000 ticks, minus 1,000 ticks. But What matters most is how much time the tick is spending above zero or below zero. And again, that should be dovetailing with your futures trades as you go. So a tick that is not spending a lot of time above zero, that does not have a lot of, we call it green paint because it paints green above and it paints red below. And we call it the iceberg because obviously an iceberg, you only see the tip, you know, the whole point of an iceberg is you see what's above water and then it has a whole part that's down below water. And so, you know, it's very, very valuable to see over the course of the day how that iceberg is painting, right? Am I painting green where I'm just consistently above? And that really drives the point home to me, at least, and I hope that it does for other traders, that it doesn't matter how high it goes. It matters how much time it's spending positive. When the market is selling off, is the tick diving below zero or is it holding? Is it just coming into like plus 100 or zero, maybe even like minus 50, and continues to paint that green swath? You know, that really tells you a lot. On a trending day, for instance, you get almost no red paint. You'll notice that the tick spends almost no time on the NYSE below zero. And if it's a trending day down, it's the opposite. You'll have all the activity under the waterline, we would call it, where it's all painting red underneath. And you just have huge market generating information that's extremely valuable in looking at that. So I would have to say, you know, internals is everything. It's just such a big part of what I do.
Awesome. I appreciate that the descriptions and
Is
your
this
thoughts. Go ahead.
Sorry, is this the next sort of I remember you guys had that cumulative tick indicator. So this is kind of like you've surpassed that even now. That's cool.
I would say this is kind of like, yeah, just like a next step in the evolution. Yep.
And this is all for the thinkorswim platform still that you
It's
guys use
all for the
scripts.
thinkorswim platform, but the weighted AD, which I think is really like the crown jewel of them, of all of them, that we have available for a number of different platforms. We have that
Oh, very
available
cool.
for NinjaTrader and also for TradingView. And
Yeah.
we are working on Sierra Charts now as well for that.
Wow, that'd be wicked. That'd be wicked. I'm all
Yeah.
for it. That'd be very cool. Yeah,
Yep.
that's that, I mean, I learned all of this internals and market structure and all of that from Shadow Trader. And you know, and then we kind of took it and you tried to make it a little bit more blue collar for people who are, you know, day trading. And
Yeah,
you know how to
certainly.
use stops and things like that. So, but all of this stuff, folks, I have to really be grateful because I was, you know, after coming off institutional trading, I was trying to trade retail. I had no idea. It was a completely different business. And if not for Peter and Brad, if they didn't have that show, I would have been lost trying to learn patterns. It was not going well. And then I finally got onto Jim Dalton, and I still remember because Peter was doing webinars every week where you would explain a concept, and I would just watch those like religiously, and that's how I learned Market Profile, you know, from watching you guys. And that's why I kept on thinkorswim just so I could hear you guys on the squawk, you know. And so it's been very. It's great to see you 5 years later because, you know, even now I'm still learning from you. It's great.
Oh, I love
Very
that. Thank you.
cool.
I really appreciate that. And I think that just kind of speaks to the efficacy and the value of what I'm talking about, right? Is that you know, you just talked about like your own evolution and how much it's helped you. So all I'm trying to say is that, you know, that's just really the proof is in the pudding that the stuff works basically, right? That
Oh, yeah.
these concepts are extremely valid and they definitely have a place, I think, in everybody's analysis, or they should.
Well, because they're based on what's actually going on in the business. If you look
Right,
at
exactly.
how
Exactly.
accumulation distribution, it's a market. You know, we take a bunch of cheap
Yeah.
stuff and sell it at a profit. And the longer
Yeah,
we can
exactly.
do it, you know, and the higher price we can do it, the better day it is. You know,
100%,
and you know,
100%.
I was always a wholesaler, so I sold millions of shares. So,
Right.
you know, if you take that and you look at it and you see what you and Jim have taught with how, and I can see, oh, you can see the distribution, the value is the cost basis, you know, and then
Yeah.
the cost basis moves up and it gets sold over time like it is now. Put it on sale today for a little while and then right back up. And it's so much the information that you pull off these TPO charts. I swear to God, sometimes you'd kind of like you'd see a level trade, and because electronic execution's so meticulous, you know, it'll trade right to a certain level that you were watching to the tick, turn around and reverse because the selling just shuts off because the efficiency of the algos are so immense. And you'll just sit there and go, my God, that's just amazing. The market
It,
profile is just crazy, the amount
no,
of
it is.
reserves.
The whole Dalton thing was something that came much later for me. I mean, in this whole journey, we were talking about starting out, whatever. I mean, the Dalton thing happened, much, much later, but it was once again just yet another aha moment. Like for me, the first big thing was learning options from some of these people in Chicago and market internals, kind of at the same time figuring out market internals and everything started clicking. But then, like I said, much, much later, profile came into it, and that was just like a whole other level. I mean, it just
Totally.
I couldn't agree more. It's just like, wow, like when you start looking at it that way and you realize that nothing is happening really outside of the inventory position of the players and what time
Exactly.
frame they're operating in. Once you realize that, like it's like, I mean, I'm not saying that it makes everything all of a sudden easy and by any shape or
No.
form, obviously, but you just have this sort of understanding of what's going on where I always call it shock and awe or lack of shock and awe. You're
Yeah.
just not surprised anymore, right? That's
Yeah.
basically it. Doesn't mean you're going to do the right thing. Doesn't mean you're going
Yeah.
to exactly know how to profit from it every
Yeah.
single day, but you're just not surprised anymore. Whereas newer traders are
Exactly.
constantly surprised, like, why is this gapping down? Or why did we
Yeah.
just gap down so big and now we're rallying? They just
Yeah.
don't get that. But the profile explains all that so well.
Yeah, it's just beyond amazing. And once people, and I think the hardest thing is for people to visualize why the chart is being created the way it is, because they've never sat and actually moved price, right?
Right.
So it's very hard to visualize what's going on. And I think that's, hopefully this profile and the way, we're trying to explain it will help people kind of, take the mask off a little bit,
Absolutely.
show people the business a bit. So it's, yeah.
Peter, my question for internals to you is like how would I guess like personally, how do you take what the internals are telling you and then like bring it down to like an individual trade? Is it something like where you kind of won't go against the grain, or I just guess maybe like speak to a little context of like how that would affect like an individual trade you're about to take?
Yeah, it's basically contextual in that my overall MO is that, everything that we talked about in terms of option structure and being net short and all that stuff, all of that is still underneath what the broad market is doing. That's my starting point. I'm generally a top-down trader, and I have to have the broad market correlating with what I'm doing. So I'm really not interested in any structures in the options market that are biased long unless I think that the market is in an uptrend or will continue to go up. And those market internals are really just confirmation of that. The internals confirm what the S&P and the NASDAQ 100 are doing, and those confirm whether or not I'm going to be in an options trade.
Nice. I like it too, 'cause not to say that trading is simple, but we can like simplify it. And I think just like starting out like, okay, I'm not going to go against what the internal's doing, 'cause I think we have a room as well, and you'll see people really try and go against the grain or things like that. And I think it's you don't got to try and be too smart, I guess is what I think at least.
No. And it's all about what you don't do. That's what newer traders, I think, have a hard time where they struggle with, because there is a mentality, I think, in trading of that you need to be doing something, but really it's a game of not doing something. All the money, I think, is made in what you don't do, because you're trying to, because you have to try to avoid those sort of bad losses that we talked about. So it's really that. And then knowing when there are periods when it's not favorable, like this is a perfect example, because we are having this discussion on, is it January 11th today, or we're having, yeah. So we're having this discussion on Tuesday, January 11th, just for people's context, if they're listening to this much later, they should probably go back to the charts and see where we are. And as we're having this discussion, the ES has been in balance for three straight sessions, right? There's been unchanged value. We have a CPI print coming tomorrow on Wednesday morning, and we also have an FOMC happening on the same day tomorrow at 2 p.m. So this market is in balance ahead of that. So I think that a lot of, especially daytime print futures traders who have been trying to get very active over the last three sessions, have probably not had that good of a go of it because the market is not there. You're going to make what the market gives you. You're going to
Exactly.
be able to, your gains are really going to be very, very commensurate with what the market is doing. I talk about this in my advisory all the time. And I absolutely stand behind it. It's like, for instance, like it's very, very typical when the market is doing something, or certainly the market is in a trend. We're coming off a pullback. We're just in this movement of like a solid 5, 6 days in one direction, right? And it's to the upside. We will often be in 10 trades live in my room. I'll have 10 trades going officially with the people, with my subscribers. And if the market is now in this choppy manner, like right now, I only have two trades on. But here's the thing. I didn't set it up that way. It's just that the market stops providing setups to me. Like, I'm not trying to pound the table here and try and say that, oh, look at me, like I'm so disciplined. You know, like when the market's chopping, I'm not in any trades, but when the market's rallying, I'm in 10 trades. No, I'm trying to explain that I'm not controlling it. I don't do that. I'm not smart enough for that. You see what I'm saying? I'm not even doing that. It's the fact that when the market's chopping, I'm going through the same charts and I'm not finding any setups. So I'm passing on everything. So I just happen to not be in any trades right now. That's the point. You see what I'm saying? But when the market is moving and it's in my direction, guess what? It's like a gold mine. The setups are just come. I don't know what to pick because it's like, oh, let's do that one. Oh, let's do that one. Oh, this is setting up. Yep, let's do it. And we just keep taking them. And next thing you know, we're in 10 trades together. That's the thing. Whereas the newer trader just, they're not letting the market dictate what's happening. They think that they can dictate it because it's a day that ends in Y, or the sun happens to be shining, or you know, they happen to get out of bed and they're alive. So they're taking trades, and they're on the accelerator pedal all the time in the same way, no matter what the market context is. And that's the problem.
Very well
Very
said.
true. Very
Yep,
true.
very well said. Peter, in hindsight, I'll ask. All right, in hindsight, is there anything you would have done different in your trading career?
Well, we all feel that way about everything. If you think about it, I mean, in trading, you have to, you know, absolutely. But no, I would say no, because you know why? Because back to one of the first things we talked about is I figured out what works for my personality. And this is actually a really good question, because there's a lot of times when I look at larger moves that I don't make, or big, you know, let's say there's certain stocks where, and this happens all the time, stocks where it's indices or whatever. And I'll say, okay, well, the market moved A to B, but your trade was not A to B. Your trade was all these smaller trades inside of it, right? Like you did these 10 different trades and these 10 different stocks, and you were inside of that move, and you made, you know, 8 out of those 10 trades were winners, but you didn't have the, you, it's not like you bought low and sold high, the big move. And you have to kind of just come to grips with that after a while, which I did a long time ago, to realize, like, you know what? The reason for that is because that's not my personality, because I don't like to have that much risk where, yes, the reward could be so huge, but if I'm wrong, it's going to be devastating, right? Or I'm going to be in a situation where it's like, oh, I thought that was the pullback low. Okay, now I'm buying more. Oh, now it's down again. Oh, now I'm buying more, right? So maybe, you know, maybe over time I've just figured out what works for me. So, you know, I think those kind of regrets really, you know, as long as you're trading within your personality, you're doing what works for you, and it has proven to have an edge, then, you know, that mode of thinking is not going to help you much, really. It's
For
not
sure.
worth thinking about,
For sure. That
you
that's
know?
why I was a little even hesitant to ask the question, but I thought it could prompt like a good response, which it was for sure. Peter, so you put out like a weekly video, and the last one you put out caught my attention a little bit. That it's titled BTC Will Explode Soon. I mean, for one, as someone who's been accumulating Bitcoin for a while, I'm happy to hear that. Could you just tell us, what was the point you were making in that video?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, for me, it's all a technical thing. I mean, you know, it should be obvious to everybody that you're seeing constant knocking on the 70,000 door. And this is very typical of Bitcoin, that these big round numbers take a while to resolve. And this one is taking some time to resolve. But also in the video, I pointed out that we've been holding in a high interest rate environment, which to me is very, very bullish, because these assets like Bitcoin and gold, they do well in a lower interest rate environment. And that's coming for us, right? We know we should get some cuts before the end of this year. So I think that's a tailwind. And just the fact that it's been holding up so well in that, I think speaks to that. And I was just kind of pointing out where that resistance level is. I believe it's 72.7 or so, 72.650, something in that area, where I think it should go. Like, once it resolves this kind of choppy area, which is very, very sideways, the buyers will be there. And certainly we have the tailwinds of all the ETF stuff, which is a big help. And it's just greater and greater adoption. Even though it's not greater and greater adoption that we can really see in terms of everyday use, there's definitely greater and greater adoption from an institutional level that's getting more and more entrenched. The ETFs are certainly that. You're definitely going to start seeing situations. I mean, it's probably happening already, right? Think about it. What's really driving the market? The market as a whole, in the bigger picture, has to be driven by institutional money, which is mostly the collection of money going into people's 401k, pensions, insurance companies, things like that. Well, these wealth managers, little by little, have to all start allocations toward Bitcoin because A, the clients are demanding it, and B, they're going to look stupid if they're not when Bitcoin goes to 100,000. So that, to me, is the bullish case here, and that over time, you have an asset that's just getting more and more accepted, and people are starting to realize, like, oh, maybe 5% of my portfolio should be in that. Well, I mean, if everybody literally actually did that, well, then Bitcoin would be at $1 million, right? And think about it, the amount of trillions of dollars that are sitting in managed funds right now, if some tiny percentage of that was allocated, it would go through the roof, right? And then the other thing that I thought was fascinating in the video, which I was saying was such a surprise to me, that I didn't know that almost 98% of all Bitcoin has already been mined. I thought that we were somewhere in the 60 to 70% range, and I understand that every 4 years is the halving, and I thought that and the runway of continued mining is still going to go on for a very, very long time. But right now, the Bitcoin rewards are down to just a little bit over 3 coins for every entire block. That means that an entire new block has to be mined, and the reward is 3 coins, and those 3 coins are split, obviously, most all the people that are hashing that are contributing to the completion of that block. But you've got literally 98% of the potential 21 million Bitcoins. That's the maximum potential. We know that Bitcoin mining stops when it hits 21 million, and we're literally 98% there. Well, that's amazing to me because, there's really no new supply coming on. And because the last halving just occurred on April 19th, that was a huge decrease in supply. And then, the obvious thing is what I was pointing out in the video, that within a 1 year period, the gains in Bitcoin after every halving event are staggering. Like, right, the first one was like a multiple of 88 times, right? From zero to the first halving, Bitcoin was up 88 times. And then it keeps kind of getting cut down, where the next time it was 29 times, and I think it was like 10. And so my thought was, okay, so if after this halving, the multiple only goes to say 2 or 3, let's just be super conservative. And 1 year from now, after this halving, what if the multiple is only 2? Well, that's 140,000, right? That's Bitcoin 140 as opposed to where we are now at 70.
The floor ceiling combo on this just seems just really good for sure
Yeah, absolutely.
on Bitcoin. Peter, do you have any are you is your interest in Bitcoin just from a trading vehicle perspective, or are you someone who kind of can get on board with, like, I guess, like the core tenets of Bitcoin?
I would say it's the former for me. Like I always say, I'm not a maximalist, I'm an opportunist. So
For sure.
it's just another chart to me. Like I'm definitely not in that camp. I have some Ethereum in a Coinbase account, but I don't have any BTC. I have a good amount of GBTC, which is the spot ETF for it. But again, that's just a swing trade like any other. And my big play is that I'm looking to add over those levels. That's really where I will get much more aggressive. If I can see that 72, my buy stop in the futures at 72.755, I believe, give or take a couple bucks. And that's where I think the entry is that would resolve the consolidation, and push us much, much higher. And then, as you've probably seen this before, whenever we have large consolidation breaks, it happens very quickly. You have to have the buy stop kind of right there on the first day because you just get these huge expansions of range. And, if and when it does happen, don't be surprised if that move from, the 72 to 100 is, it could easily happen over a 3 day period,
Quick.
easily, very quickly. Yeah. It just doesn't let anybody in. You have to be ready before or like right there when it's happening.
For sure. That's why I just like to be positioned in it and I just let it
Yeah.
do its thing,
Yeah.
because
Yeah.
that's, I guess, the other way to go about it. Peter, I thought this was interesting, and I'm just going to throw this out there to why I think Bitcoin is unique too. And I guess we could say, like, another bullish point we had on Hunter Horsley. He's one of the founders of the was it B JG, do you remember the symbol for it?
BITB.
Yeah, BITB, the Bitcoin ETF, one of the ETFs. And he was saying what, and I never heard anyone say it like this. The uniqueness of Bitcoin is like it kind of overlaps into like a few spheres. So you'll have someone like yourself, and like JJ probably falls in this as well, is like are interested in it as a trading vehicle. And then you have the people who are interested in it as a technology, and then you have people who are interested in it as a like a maximalist, right? And just like the core tenets. And so you have this like overlap of people who like it for different reasons, and then people who like it for all three of those reasons. It creates a nice, potential explosive combination. So I think that's really unique.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Yep. Yeah,
it's the ultimate low float stock.
Yeah, and
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. It's
the
yeah,
supply demand. Yeah, it's awesome. Yeah.
it's low float stocks. This is if in the 90s we used to sit around and go, could you imagine if there was a market that was completely unregulated, that we could just do whatever the hell we wanted? And here it is.
Yeah.
And it's real. And and it's making people a lot of money.
Yeah.
It's fascinating. I love
Absolutely.
it. Yep.
Absolutely. It's yeah, quite amazing.
Peter, we had this I guess this recent GME event going on with Roaring Kitty. I didn't I don't know. I kind of when these things pop up, I kind of like, I don't know if I'm a curmudgeon about these things, but I'm like, I don't know. I can't get into it. But I guess it's a big event that happened. I didn't watch his stream. Were you following this, or just what were your thoughts on this going on?
I actually watched his stream just out of curiosity, which he
Yeah.
didn't really say much. It seemed like a lot of incoherent rambling to me. I was one thing I was fascinated by the scope of it in terms of the amount of people. There were 650,000 people
Crazy.
on that live stream, which I thought was just like, wow, like, okay.
Amazing.
But the stock was tanking the whole time he was talking, and it continued to tank. So I don't know, how much help it was,
Let me interject and just
Yeah.
say, from someone who's dumped millions of shares into the US public markets, it's
Right.
not a coincidence that he showed up just when all these registrations for the company started happening. I mean, if you think it's coincidental that he just appeared and then all of a sudden the company's filing to sell shelf registrations, and it's been a couple of years now. If anybody knows anything about restricted stock, that's now due. This guy pops up, and I look at liquidity. That thing was trading $12 billion a day in
It's
dollar yen.
amazing.
You could dump so much stock into that market, like
Yeah.
it would take. You could literally liquidate $2-3 billion worth of stock a day into that day trading. It
Yeah.
is something that I've never seen in markets before, the liquidity like that. And it the power of retail buying now is just, and they're selling into it, of course, because that's what you
My
do.
question was like, and I wasn't following it too closely, but like I saw like something like he had a $200 million position. Like, how the hell did he even get a $200 million position?
Yeah, I didn't understand that either. I was looking at that as well. Like, how was he able to amass that much of a I didn't get that. I mean, did he do that well on the first run up? But I don't it didn't seem that way. I mean, I thought it was more like a $10 million play or whatever. I didn't understand that.
Yeah, me neither. Because that's what I was thinking too. Was it from the first run? But I mean, 200 million is a lot. Like, I mean, 10 mil to two, like that's absurd. I mean,
Especially to
yeah.
keep in an E-Trade account. I mean,
Yeah. And GameStop. And GameStop.
I mean, like, here's the thing. It's you would if you put that kind of money into a retail brokerage account. I mean, having worked in the industry, there'd be a lot of sort of alarm bells going off compliance-wise. You don't that's it's different if you have, a prime brokerage with Goldman Sachs and you've got 400 million in there or whatever. But
Right.
for detailed guy to have, that kind of a position. I don't know. There's something about all this that, just because, I'm from Vancouver, this all just sounds very fishy to me. It's just all very fishy.
No, for sure. I mean, I think, I mean, I've seen a lot of like, I guess conspiracies you'd call it. There's a lot of theories of what's going on here. It's interesting, but yeah.
Hey, he could
I know.
be a paid actor. Who knows?
Yeah.
Like Iron Man
Possible.
3.
I
Like
mean, who
Iron Man
knows? I
3,
mean, it's possible.
It sure is. It's, I guess, just up to speculation. Peter, last thing here, and I get you going on your way, man. Appreciate you being gracious with your time. I think I read that you enjoy meditating. I guess you could just speak to that and like what role meditation plays for you.
Yeah, I do. I mean, I don't really connect it too deeply with the markets, but I mean, on a very surface level, I think it's something everybody should be doing. It's kind of like a bath for our brains. We all shower every day, but we don't really pay too much attention to all the gunk that's in our head. And kind of dovetails with what I was saying earlier about trading is that, the big secret is it's all about what you don't do. And so, not to get too metaphysical or deep on it, but like, I kind of like the secret to life, I think, has to be not in, what should I be doing? It's what I shouldn't be doing, and like we're all just human beings, but we're mostly kind of acting like humans doing all the time, right? We're never really just humans being. And meditation is an opportunity for all of us to just be at that moment and not be striving for anything, not be looking for anything, not be doing anything, not trying to be something or not be something or do something. It's just being present fully with our mind and with our breath for that period, and yeah, I think it's super powerful. I can't recommend it enough to folks. I think everybody should kind of at least dip a toe in that water and try, even if they can, just for 2 to 3 minutes a day to maybe bring that into their life in some manner. And I think it would have some positive effects.
Couldn't agree more. I practice Zazen. This is the Zen form of it. What type of meditation do you
Mostly like a Theravada Buddhism, which is how I learned it. I was fortunate enough to hang out with some monks, but I lived in Miami for many, many years, and there's a Thai temple there. And I met all these monks from Thailand, and they kind of taught me some ropes like early on. And I spent a lot of time with one of them on the weekends. I would go hang out and we would sit together. And that was just a it was really, really beautiful. And yeah, so for me it's basically that, strictly just kind of breath oriented. Following the breath all the time, and that's my thing.
That's awesome, man. Love to hear it. Thanks so much, Peter. And with that, that's going to conclude today's episode of Confessions of a Market Maker. If you guys enjoyed this episode, please rate and review it for us. If you'd like to join a supportive professional trading room, you can join us at microefutures.com. Peter, let the people know where they can find you, and anything else you'd like them to know.
Yeah, absolutely. So we are at shadowtrader.net. And you can check us out there. We've got 3 trading rooms. We have something called Live Trading Suite, which is one for stocks and options and one that's dedicated just for futures. And then riding alongside that, we have my room, which is just me. And that's dealing strictly in weekly options and using a lot of those structures that I talked about to effectuate your plan in the markets being net short and using those esoteric structures with that lack of cost, so to speak, and trying to set things up where you're not losing when you're wrong, like on direction. So that's basically what we're doing. And we touched upon just for a second, but I also write a morning report and video, which is very market profile oriented. That's all the stuff we talked about, Jim Dalton and the profile, et cetera, where basically I just spend a few minutes laying out how I feel the day is going to play out, different scenarios, and viewing the market through that lens of market profile. So that's basically it. So shadowtrader.net is where you can check all this stuff out.
All right. Awesome, guys. Make sure to check them out. JJ, parting words.
Thank you so much, Peter, for being with us. It's great having you come back, and
I appreciate it.
very, very grateful for everything that you've taught, and we're still learning from you. So please, folks, if
Thank
you're
you so
not,
much.
yeah, please follow him. Thank you.
Awesome. I really enjoyed the conversation. Thanks a lot, Peter. So for Shadow Trader, I'm Paulie Walnuts. He's the gorilla of House Street. Use stops, though.